All right, we're here for the final hour of overtime. Ben Standing with you till 9 o'clock. We have been talking a lot about the Commanders, had Britt Giroli from The Athletic to talk Nats and Orioles. We just talked Wizards and NBA draft with our guy Chase Hughes from Monumental Sports. And I think we'll get into the NBA playoffs. We've got game 4 of the Western Conference Series tonight. We had the big comeback last night for the Knicks against the Pacers. Speaking of Indiana, though, there is some big news out of the WNBA. And look, the WNBA is not typically, as we know, a hot local sports talk topic, especially when it's not involving the team, the city that you're in. But Caitlin Clark has changed the game when it comes to talking about the WNBA. Her star is off the charts. You know, whether you want to compare it to sort of the way Tiger Woods, I'm not saying she's Tiger Woods, but like the way Tiger Woods changed the conversation and the interest in golf, she brings so many more eyeballs and so much more attention to the league. And she was expected to play here against the Mystics on Wednesday. In this case, here means in Baltimore, but, you know, against the Mystics. Except that we found out today Caitlin Clark's going to miss at least a couple of weeks with a left quad strain, at least a couple of weeks. So we'll see what that means for the Fever, but also for the WNBA. It's going to be really interesting to see ratings, like Indiana's ratings for television in particular. Well, that's what ratings mean. Dwarf the rest of the league. Spare me that if you're still out there saying this big uptick in WNBA attention is not about Caitlin Clark. It is. You want to keep, you know, denying that, you know, go ahead. But the uptick in this league is about her. She is a tremendous player, an incredible shooter, and she may be even a better passer than she is a shooter. And the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the interest in this league that has gone up. But now she's out for a couple of weeks. I don't think this puts, you know, they don't have to cancel the league or anything, of course. I mean, there's still plenty of, if you're interested in the WNBA, there's plenty here to enjoy. For those who don't know, and why would you, for many, many years, I effectively was like the beat writer for the Mystics for the Associated Press, where I did a lot of freelancing for the AP over the years. And when it came to the Mystics, I was always in Cap One all the time for Wizards and Georgetown games. I basically lived there. I think one year I was there for like over 100 days. It was stupid stuff. Anyway, I would go to most of the Mystics home games and cover them. And this was back when they were really terrible before the Elena Delladon era. And then I was there when they lost to Seattle in the WNBA finals. I used to tell my friends and others who would say, oh, come on, I'm not going to watch this. I'd say, look, yeah, I get it. You want to say they don't dunk. I get it. But like, the perimeter game in particular, if you watch this and don't see the basketball that you enjoy, I don't know what to tell you. You know, whether it was Diana Taurasi or Sue Bird or Tamika Catchings or Maya Moore or whomever. But Caitlin Clark is different, and there is no question about that. The Angel Reese conversation with Caitlin Clark, say whatever you want to about it from like a social perspective, but from a basketball perspective, it's not a discussion. There is no conversation between Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. Caitlin Clark is an MVP candidate level type player, and Angel Reese is a fine player, but not even in that same ballpark. So when it comes to ratings and attention, it is about Caitlin Clark. Maybe a little bit was about that rivalry that the two of them have coming into the league, having met in the national championship game, and that's where they sort of Angel Reese's LSU team won. I didn't particularly like the way Angel Reese kind of went up to Caitlin Clark afterwards and pointed to her ring finger to say, we got this. It's really not the kind of move you see from players typically in leagues, but whatever. It got some attention. That part to me is that should be over. That conversation should be over unless the Chicago Sky Reese's team gets to be pretty good and matches up with Angel Reese. But other than that, this is about Caitlin Clark, and it will be really interesting to see what are the ratings with her being out. Indiana, basically all of their games are national TV games. Will people still want to watch with her not being there? I'm going to guess no, but we will see about that as we come up here for sure. All right, we've got a call here. I think I know who this caller is. But we're going to take it anyway. Adam is on line one. Adam, what do you want to yell at me about?
Who, me?
Yeah, you, Adam. What's on your mind? What you got for me?
Well, I was wondering, you're talking with Chase earlier, and which Wizards players do you think could develop or could right now be in the rotation on one of these four teams in the conference finals? Because it doesn't seem like maybe Sar, in my opinion, would be a rotation guy because there's a limited big man out there. But I'm just wondering from a talent standpoint, how far away are they really from having pieces that could put him in the conference finals or even the second round?
Well, I know you are a longtime noted Wizards thinker, so I'm going to turn it back to you after this. I think Sar, just for what you just said, based on, like, look, we've seen teams in these playoffs have no backups. Like, the Denver Nuggets had no big man backup behind Jokic. The Lakers didn't play a big man in their closeout game. They just didn't literally play a big man because they didn't have one. And that is definitely a question. And I think Sar, to me, at a minimum, he can hit the three and he can block some shots and he can run the court and he's not a bad passer. He's not tough enough yet. He's got to build up the toughness on rebounding. And, from the Wizards perspective, I don't know that we can sit here and say he's going to be a key piece of a team that makes the playoffs or contends. Maybe not makes the playoffs, but contends. But he would be my best guess. I think Bub Carrington, I know you're a fan. I like his mental toughness, but I don't know that you're going to say he's part of a playoff rotation, especially in a sport where there's so many good guards and wings out there. That's why it's like, as much as like the process that they are doing is working, that's what was such a bummer about not getting Cooper Flagg, realistically. It's, of course, every team would say that, but they don't have that one signature player yet, and that's why it's hard to say how far away they are. They could be close because they have like a volume of young players the way, say, the Pacers do, but on the other hand, they don't have a guy that you would say is Tyrese Halliburton or Pascal Siakam. They don't have anything like that yet, so I think they're still a ways away, but it's a good question. What say you on that?
I think if Bilal could have played a full season and maybe continued his progression, he could be in that conversation. I thought he started the season off pretty well, but then sort of slowed down. So it's hard to tell if he's made that second year leap or not. So I guess that's an open question for next year. But I think him and Sar are the only two right now, which, it's nice getting the number six pick, but they're really going to have to hit on that pick, I think, to have enough talent in the pipeline. Usually guys like a Halliburton, SGA, like they show something more in their first year or two, even when they're like the 14th pick or 10th pick. You see that flash that maybe Bilal had a little bit of, but, you see that early. So, I don't know that they have anyone yet on their roster.
I will throw this back to you. Oh, is Adam gone? You're still
I'm
there. Okay, cool. So here's a question. I was talking with Chase earlier. I don't think it matters to me at this draft what position they take. They just got to get more talent for the reasons that we're discussing, that they don't have necessarily have somebody that you have to worry about blocking per se, or that somebody is so good that like you've got that position locked down for years to come. Do you feel that way as well about Bilal or Sar, even though we're saying those are two guys that maybe could actually play for a playoff team?
Yeah, because I think Chase made a good point about them having positionless players. So you would say Bilal is what? He could be a two, he could be a three, he could be even four. Sar could be a four or five. So you don't even know what positions would be locked in. Even if you thought Sar was a guaranteed starter, you don't even know where he's going to be exactly. And one thing I like about Dawkins and Winger is they seem to identify guys they want and go after them. So I would trust them to make their decision. They're not like letting the draft fall to them. Even when I guess Bilal was there, they traded up one spot for whatever reason. They thought maybe someone would jump them or not, but they had the one guy they're looking for and they go out and get him. So I imagine they're going to have somebody, and they probably already maybe decided on the number six, and it could be a surprise to everybody.
Absolutely. All right, Adam, great call. Appreciate it. And go enjoy watching your Liddell Echols highlight tape. I appreciate the call because I got another call here I got to take, but I appreciate that. Do we still? Oh, no other call. Got it. All right. Fair enough. I thought we had a different call, but all good. Adam, I know Adam, if you couldn't tell based on that.
I think he gave us an alias name.
Oh, did he?
He said he was Todd.
Oh, well, Todd is somebody else that I'm familiar with. So that's a funny bit. Look, everybody's welcome to call 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We've got till 9 o'clock. We've got more to discuss. It's the Bencast. We got Ben here, producer Ben, producer Bennett. We've got a lot of Bens here, and we'll talk amongst ourselves. We've got a lot to get into. Like I said, NBA playoffs. We've got more Commander stuff. We'll talk, your calls or not, till 9 o'clock here on 106.7 The Fan. Going to be an interesting Western Conference game tonight. Will the Thunder come back after getting romped in the last game and take a 3-1 lead, or do the Thunder actually make this a 2-2 series and tie this up? We'll talk a little bit more about that and where these NBA playoffs are headed. You can, of course, call in, though. You want to talk Commanders, NBA playoffs, whatever you got. 1-800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. You can, of course, listen on the Odyssey app. If you want to tweet at me, at Ben Standig on Twitter or Blue Sky. But we do have a call right now. Uptown Mo wants to talk a little bit about Jaden Daniels. I've heard of him. Mo, what are you thinking about the Commanders quarterback?
Hey, you've been in practice. Is JD5 really as big as they're saying he is in the articles?
Well, I haven't seen him yet this year, this offseason. The only time we've been out there is when the rookies were there. So this will be on Wednesday our first chance to get a look at him. And I talked about before that for me, these OTAs are not about the X's and O's. It's a lot about the eye test. See how guys are looking just individually and what are people saying. And that is a definite question. Has he legitimately put on weight, or what's going on? What's the buzz out there? What are you hearing? What are people saying about his supposed, new look?
Oh, so, I'm reading Yahoo Sports. I'm digesting all Riggles, Rags. I'm reading all this stuff, right? And they all got pictures. And the only picture they show, I don't know if it's Photoshop, but his arms look like Hulk Hogan jumps. You see what I'm saying? So I'm like, is this man really this ripped up now? Because I had to ask you, because you be out there. You got the inside scoop. You know what I mean? I had to ask you, you laid your eyes on.
I appreciate it. It's a great question because, like I said, that, with Jaden in particular, it's not like we can pick at a lot of things he did wrong last year, because it wasn't much. So certainly we want to see, what did he work on this year as a passer, certain parts of his of the passing tree he wanted to get on. But yeah, a lot of it is his physical makeup. The worst part of the season last year for this team was when he hurt his ribs. Did he do something to help with that, or just get bigger in general? So yeah, I'm definitely curious. I mean, I would be stunned if he's all of a sudden, looking like he's about to go into a WWE ring and battle John Cena or something. But I'm sure he worked on it. I'm sure he lifted weights and got a little bit bigger. So that would be key. What do you hope from beyond just weight? Is there anything you were kind of hoping he would have worked on this offseason?
So, actually, it's crazy that you asked that. The only thing that I hope people work on for real is his under-the-center game, because I feel like it's limiting our play-action game. I feel like we in shotgun and pistol so much that it gives, a tail to the defense. So, that's the only thing I would want him to mature and improve on. Because if you look at these quarterbacks like Patty Mahomes, yeah, they be in the gun, but they be under the center, too. And especially Jared Goff, that makes the Detroit play-action game, that much more effective, and I think it makes their run game more effective. So that's the only thing I would add. I would have liked to see Cliff add to the offense this offseason. As far as the Wizards, right? So this is my thing. I think Keyshawn George showed the most promise, right? I think that Bub Currington got the highest floor, but I think Sarr got the highest ceiling. And I think Sarr's actual position is not positionless. I think he's a four. I think he's a stretch four. I think he falls into that Carl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis, kind of category where they could play five, but it's not their best position. And I think the Wizards need to draft a big to take that pressure off of him and let him expand his game. So I don't know who they're going to get in the draft. I do like the pieces that they put together, but I think Sar has the highest ceiling. I think Bub got the highest floor.
Mo, I think those are all great points. I really appreciate the call. I'm with you on, I mean, Alex Sar, I agree with you as the highest ceiling. I mean, you know, the big man who's mobile, who can shoot. I know last year when he had that one like terrible game in the summer league where he missed like every single shot and everybody, that kind of was like the stigma for him. That was like how people remember his summer league. But my takeaway was the guy could shoot. Like he was more than willing and capable of shooting from the perimeter. And he showed that during the regular season. But to your point, that's also an indication of like, yeah, he's more of that stretch four. I think he could play a little stretch five. And if you're talking like a small ball lineup, you know, he is 7 feet tall. But I'm with you. He doesn't, you know, listed at 205 pounds. He's not a guy that you're going to have, say, bang inside against a Nikola Jokic or a healthy Joel Embiid. I agree with that. And I do think they need another big. We talked before about the Wizards not having to worry about position when it comes to the draft, like just get the best talent. But somewhere, whether it's not the draft or free agency, they do need to add some more depth inside, bulk, what have you. They had Jonas Valanciunas last year purposely to give Sar a bit of a blow at center or to, you know, play alongside a guy who's been a solid NBA starter in his career. They're going to need more of that. Right now you've got Rashawn Holmes, who's, you know, a decent journeyman type big, but not a guy you want out there for too many minutes, especially on a young team like this. So I agree with you there. As for Keyshawn George, he was the biggest surprise of the group, and I'm a big sucker for 6'8" guards who have some point guard skills, can pass. You can sell me on that kind of a guy every day. I'm all in on that. He showed me enough. Like all three of these guys, I think, could be top eight rotation players on a good team, but not necessarily. I don't know if any of them are necessarily top two, you know, top two, three, four, or even five. I think Sar has the best chance, but we've got to see more on that front for sure. But it's going to be interesting to see how they go. You know, again, kudos to the Wizards for, you know, 2 years in, staying the course here, that they've taken full advantage of the fact that they have, they'll take on other teams' garbage, or maybe that's a little harsh, take on other teams' contracts they're trying to get rid of, like the way Memphis wanted to get rid of Marcus Smart, and they turned that into the 18th pick in the draft. As unfortunate as the Wizards were not getting a top two or three pick, when they made the trade to get Marcus Smart and take on a first-round pick, The Grizzlies were picking like 27th at the time, but they fell apart late in the season, ended up with the 18th pick. Couldn't have worked out much better for the Wizards. So, yes, it was not all good luck, and you'd rather, of course, have the sixth pick. I'm sorry, the second pick rather than the sixth pick versus being 18 or 27. But, hey, you can't do everything. That's the way this one went. One last thing here I wanted to get to. I had a question on Twitter, pulling it up here, from Scott Frank. He was curious why the Commanders have not yet signed any of these defensive ends that are out there, as Za'Darius Smith, Matthew Judon, etc. He also makes the point, well, nobody else has signed them either. And I think that is the point. I think whatever signings are going to happen, should they make any of like a player that you've heard of, it's going to come much closer to training camp. None of these vets want to deal with OTAs or minicamp at this point. I mean, unless a team offers them like better money than expected to come in now, they're all going to wait. They'll wait till training camp and get ready for that. So if the Commanders are going to do anything along those lines, sign one of these veteran defensive ends, I think just, you know, pack your patience on that one. They may not do anything, but if they're going to, I think you're going to have to wait until a lot closer to training camp would be my guess, unless something happens here in OTAs that makes them think, hey, we need more help, we need to secure it right now. All right, we've got another couple more segments to go. Ben Standing with you until 9 o'clock here on 106.7 The Fan. So our last caller, Mo, had some good questions about Jaden Daniels and the Wizards, some good questions and some good thoughts. And he asked me about Jaden Daniels. Like, is he coming into camp bigger? Does he look more muscular? And as I said, we have not seen Jaden yet. We've only been out there for rookie camp, but we will this week. And when I asked him, you know, what was he hearing, he said that one of the local Commanders fan sites, Riggo's Rag, mentioned something. So I was looking at trying to find on Riggo's Rag what he was talking about, and I see a headline on here, producer Ben. The headline is Commanders Insider puts Deron Payne on blast before career defining season. And before I clicked on it, I knew who the Commanders Insider was. And that would be me, because in my story that I had up today on The Athletic, I said somewhat similar to what I talked about earlier when I spoke about what players on the Commanders, whose performances has the biggest potential variance for Washington to take up, step up, or maybe to plateau, or you know, maybe even take a step back. And I said Deron Payne in part because we know they haven't added sort of overt help out on the edge. There are questions about the pass rush, but also, like, you know, Deron Payne is a guy who in 2022 was a Pro Bowl player, you know, double digit sacks. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen that guy yet since. He's been fine. It's not like he's been terrible. He just hasn't been to that level, and they could use that. This is a good year for that to happen, especially no John Allen. But I didn't put him on blast. This is the tough part of the aggregation headlines. I appreciate the people who write at Riggo's Rag. I get it. I've worked for sites. I get the point here. I didn't put him on blast. I don't need that. I just think he needs to step up. I don't think that's crazy, right? I mean, he's making big money. This was the previous regime, but they didn't give him this big, huge extension. What was it, 4 years, $90 million, to not even have 11 and a half sacks that he had in 22. They hasn't gotten that in the last 2 years. And he's had the same amount of tackles for loss. They just need more out of him. I don't think this is crazy.
Yeah, I think people might look at it as a slight toward him, but it's not. Because if you look at this in retrospect with the situation that they had with Jonathan Allen this past year, you start to wonder if this front office maybe would have rather kept around Jonathan Allen than Deron Payne in this situation. However, Deron Payne's dead cap hit, if they would have let him go, I believe it's like $26 million or something like that. So this year wasn't really the situation where it would have made much sense to release Deron Payne and have him look elsewhere. Jonathan Allen made a lot more sense in terms of saving cap money for what the Commanders did. But if he does not step up this year in a big way, as you're alluding to, the writing might be on the wall for him to have a very similar fate that Allen did this offseason. And that's nothing against him, really. It's just kind of what this front office has done with the previous regime.
100%. I mean, this front office has... They would never come out publicly and say this, but it's been clear by their actions. There are no sacred cows on this team, and certainly not from the group that was here before they got here. I'm sure that they, you know, look, this is how life works. When you bring in people that you hire, in the back of your head, the tie is going to go to that person versus somebody you inherited, because the reality is you get less credit for what you inherited than what you do. So in the case of John Allen and Deron Payne, they were signed to big deals before Adam Peters and Dan Quinn got here. And look, this year, Deron Payne has a salary cap hit of $26.2 million, basically. His dead money is even more than that, $29.8 million when you factor in signing bonuses and things like that. They would be underwater if they were to release him or whatever. So that's not going to be a thing. Next year, the cap number is $28 million, but the dead money is $11.2 million, and they would save 16.8, and that's 11.2 is still a high number, but it's not 28. And if, you know, depending on what happens, if they have another successful year in particular, they may want to have some more money available, either A, to re-sign some of their own guys, or B, to go out and get pieces that, you know, they think will take him even to another level. And again, unless Deron Payne steps up, then he hasn't done that. But again, he's been fine. Like, I'm not saying he's been bad. He just hasn't been as good as the guy you're hoping you're getting when you give him a 4-year, $90 million deal. And I just think the point has got to be made a little bit more now. Again, Montez Sweat's gone. Chase Young's gone. Jonathan Allen is now gone. And the reality is that the Commanders have made some good investments through the draft and free agency at other positions, but they've been a little bit lighter. at on the defensive line. And Johnny Newton, they did draft, of course. And by the way, I don't know, Ben, if this is – I don't think this is tied in. Last year they drafted Johnny Newton, I think, knowing that John Allen could be released. This offseason they signed Javon Kinlaw to a deal, which was, you know, I still think a little odd, but okay, 3 years, yeah. $45 million. He could be the Daron Payne replacement if they go that route. So I just think he needs to step up for his own career, but also for this team to go to another level.
I mean, people are also speculating we might see Kinlaw serve as an elephant-style edge because it's pretty clear that they wanted to get much bigger on this defensive line because they couldn't stop the run last year, and that was ultimately the downfall of this team. If you can't stop the run, your defense is never going to be successful, and I think they've made a very conscious effort to try to pick up guys that will set the edge better at the edge rusher position. I mean, that's why you let go of a guy in Dante Fowler who had 10.5 sacks last year. I mean, that's your leading sack guy in terms of production-wise, but he proved really that he's not worth being paid every down defensive end money. He's not a guy that can consistently set the edge. He's more of a situational pass rusher, which is fine. And I think this Commanders team still needs a guy to serve in that role. And as you mentioned earlier, maybe we see somebody like that get signed around training camp. But I think they also, at this point, are probably trying to find a way to prioritize where money is going in terms of an extension for Terry McLaurin.
For sure, for sure. Of the things I'm going to watch at OTAs, yeah, we'll note if Terry McLaurin is there, but I'm not worrying about his salary yet. If we get to training camp and he still hasn't signed anything, then we can have a conversation. Until that point, I wouldn't stress over it. But yeah, you're definitely right about the line. They wanted to get bigger. You know, you like to think, and like last year when this team, when they were putting together this roster, it really felt they were going sort of best player available across anywhere. As I was discussing about the Wizards, they could just get talent. They don't have to really worry about position. I think that's kind of basically what the Commanders were doing last year. Like, obviously you have to have, you know, enough receivers and cornerbacks and offensive linemen, whatever, to play. But like, how do we get better? How do we just get, you know, the roster was deficient with talent. They needed to get more pieces. They did that. And I think to some degree this offseason, they kind of did that again, except though, it does feel like on the defensive line, they were like, hey, we were horrendous against the run. And it wasn't just against the run. It was against the team that we have to beat, the Philadelphia Eagles. Saquon Barkley ran all over them, as we know. Mm-hmm. And they went for that. And I think Kinlaw will be playing some of that elephant position on the edge, where basically he's going to be there focusing on the run more than the pass. They didn't focus as much about the pass rush. Important. But they, I think, felt like, hey, we got a lot of sacks last year. They were top half of the league in sacks. And Fowler was helpful, but like, I don't, you know, like, he didn't get like crazy money in the market. So
yeah,
they were definitely hyper focused on stopping the run. They, Kinlaw, Dietrich Wise, guys will do that. We'll see about the rest. I give the benefit of the doubt to this point, but we'll see how it goes as we get deeper into this off season.
Ben, I mean, if anyone that's listening, you know, is still upset, I mean, it's been so long. I feel like people have moved on, but if anyone is in disagreement or can't understand why Dante Fowler was not brought back, all they need to do is watch the first play of the NFC Championship game and just watch number six and watch how it gets completely taken out of the play right away. And, you know, that's ultimately the things they're looking at, because that was kind of a common occurrence with him. He was typically washed out of plays on the run.
Yeah, and that was a game where, despite everything's on the line, Super Bowl or bust, he played his fewest snaps of the season. I don't think that was out of spite. I don't think it was just, you know, mistakes happen. Like you said, he kind of got taken out of that play. But if, you know, you're going to keep him in the game if you think he's going to help. But he wasn't great against the run. That was their focus. And they moved on from him. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Kinlaw. Easily, Kinlaw is going to be one of the most fascinating stories for this season, and particularly to see how they use him. Now, again, not so much OTAs, but when we get to training camp, for sure. All right, one more segment to go. Me and the other Bennett are here until 9 o'clock on 106.7 The Fan. Introducing a segment. We've got a few more minutes to go here on 106.7 The Fan. I figure we can close it out with kind of where I started with the Commanders. Again, OTAs begin this week. The media is out there on Wednesday. 12:15 practice. Dan Quinn will talk before practice. Cliff Kingsbury will also talk before practice, and then we'll get some of the players after practice. No, I don't know exactly which players they'll tell us that day, but I don't know for sure. Of course, if you have thoughts or questions, hit me up on Twitter at Ben Standig. And I also, of course, talk about this all the time on my podcast. I'll mention Last Man Standig. But in the last few minutes here, producer Ben and producer Bennett are here. They are both Commanders fans. And I was like, you know, hey, why not open up the phones to them? So you guys have thoughts or comments or questions, whatever you got. Whoever wants to go, what do you want to talk about the Commanders?
Yeah. You know, obviously, entering the season, expectations are high. Just like, when was the last time, you know, you've covered this team for years. When was the last time expectations for this team was this high? Because obviously back in 2012, you know, make the playoffs. RG3 looked great until the injury. You know, expectations were probably high going into that season, but they were lowered because of the injury. So, you know, it's probably been a very, very long time since expectations were this high. Just your opinion on that.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, like you said, with the RG3 injury, like whatever the expectations were, they were already going to be lowered just because we didn't know his deal. And then, you know, the all-in for week one stuff was one of the early points for me where I was like, I don't know about this. I don't know where this is going. I'm not sure I like this. Before that, though, man, like the year where Brad Johnson was the quarterback and they made a playoff run. This is when North Turner was the coach, right? Was that North Turner? Yeah, I think so. And, well, whatever. But then Jeff George came in the next offseason, and that immediately, it wasn't the injury, but that immediately cast a lot of questions about what's going on here. Why would you bring in Jeff George? I think they were paying him more money than Brad Johnson. So, honestly, in a realistic level, I mean, they would win the offseason all the time. You know, they would sign the Bruce Smiths of the world and Deion Sanders, and people got a hype for that. But in terms of realistic, we honestly may have to go all the way back to the Super Bowl era. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic saying that. That's just kind of how it's been. You know, I guess maybe with the year when Kirk Cousins they won a division and got to the playoffs, there was some hope there. Alex Smith, you know, they started off pretty good. But yeah, in terms of being like, hey, can they make the Super Bowl for real? You probably, for me, have to go back to the Super Bowl era. And that is, I'm fortunate to be old enough to have seen those Super Bowls. For everybody who didn't, wow. I every time I think about that, I feel so bad for everybody, for all the fans. But hopefully, Jaden, this is just the start of a great run. That would be exciting, to say the least.
You know how many, like, Commander fans I've seen appear out of the cut on a college campus? I was there for 4 years. Then all of a sudden, this year, come January, I see people walking around campus with Jaden Daniels jerseys. People are at all the bars watching every Commanders game. And I was like, guys, the past 4 years, you guys all made fun of me for rooting for the Commanders. Every time I would go out to watch the game somewhere, there'd be nobody here. Now I can't even get a seat to watch these games. That's the Jaden Daniels effect for you right there.
I know the Orioles are in a bit of a lull right now, a little bit of a dip. But the last few years where they became a contender, making the playoffs, they look like they're the hot team that people are interested in. I kept track of all of my friends and family who completely got off the bandwagon for the past decade or more. Because, look, Peter Angelos was Baltimore's version of Dan Snyder. The team was going nowhere, one losing season after another. And then just as they start to emerge, and right at the same point the Nats dip, suddenly all the people who went over to the Nats were like, hey, I'm an Orioles fan. I'm like, really? I don't know. I got you on the naughty list over here.
It makes me so mad.
I keep track.
Makes me so mad. Some of my friends that were Nationals fans when they won the World Series are now Orioles fans, but now they're regretting it again, and they're starting to take notice of James Wood and be Nats fans. And go, you can't have it both ways. You can't be a fan of both.
Yeah, I mean, when I grew up, there was no Washington baseball team, so you know, I was interested in Major League Baseball. The Orioles were here; they were covered like they were a local team. You know, plus you had Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken; they were good, so that was my team. And when they got bad, even with the team here, I'm like, no, that's not how this works. And I get it. You shouldn't necessarily have to be locked in just by geography, but like that's just how if you move out of town, I'm not saying you should abandon your team, but if like, you know, you move from here to say Denver, I know the Colorado Rockies are bad or the Broncos, but like if you become interested in the Broncos or the Nuggets because they're local, I get it. Like, I mean, you know, you want to have fun with where you are, be part of the community, you know, but like that's like it. Other than that, no. It's like in college, if your kid goes to school, like Bennett went to the University of Florida. If I couldn't have cared less about Florida, but my kid went there, yeah, let's go Gators, national champs. Come on, let's go. Other than that, you know, buzz off. Like, I'm a, you know, whatever team you are, stay with your team. But, you know, have some integrity, people. Be sports fans, but have some integrity.
Well, it's also, you know, people will ask, like, oh, you know, what's your second favorite team you would root for? And I've just never been that type of fan. You know, I've always, you know, at least as a fan, I thought I've stayed loyal. But, you know, what's the point in jumping ship to, say, the Ravens? You know, obviously good team. You know, one Super Bowl win since the 2010s. But, you know, now that the Commanders, you know, are back on the rise, it's great to be a fan. It's great to be a fan right now. And I guess I'm interested, just quickly, you know, what was that, the being at the Ravens Commanders game this year? Was it, you know, obviously Ravens have a passionate fan base, so do the Commanders. Did you see a lot more Commanders than you were expecting there?
I mean, yeah, at that point, that was, the buzz was really starting to pick up there. And, you know, the Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson matchup was a lot. But the Ravens, you know, are one of those fan bases where I don't know, you know, how often they're selling their tickets. They want to be at those games. And you know, it's just a different type of town. They're not a front runner fan base, even though, of course, they haven't had to worry about that because they've largely been a really good team for the last, you know, for this whole century, basically. But yeah, that was definitely a game where you could start to feel the momentum shifting. And I know some people who live in that Laurel Columbia corridor where it's sort of like you're on the border of both, and you know, you can kind of pick and choose where you want to go. And that, you know, they were telling me that they were noticing a lot more, like when they would take their kid to the bus stop, there'd be a lot more kids wearing, say, Jaden Daniels jerseys. Before it was like all Lamar Jackson. So yeah, I think anecdotally you can see some of that for sure. And you know, even though they only play the Ravens, you know, once every 4 years, you can't really call it a rivalry. We all kind of understand that there is something there for sure. When the team eventually moves to a DC stadium, that may give the Ravens a little more runway to take advantage of that Maryland fan base. I mean, I think if you're a Commanders fan, you don't really care, but you know what I mean? Like, some are a little wishy-washy in that regard. And maybe, you know, sometimes they just, hey, it's easier to go to a Ravens game. So they'll side in that regard. Good questions. Good thoughts.
I got one more quick one. Shoot. Just, you know, obviously the schedule release came out recently. Just outside of the division, a game that you're most excited for. You know, they play the Chiefs, multiple primetime games. Just quickly, obviously, one team you're most excited to play.
It's not a team. It's a location. Let's go Spain. I mean, hopefully I can work that out and get over there. I've never been to Spain. Going overseas is fun. And, I've, you know, to see a football game in that stadium over in Madrid is crazy. I would love to go that one. The Dolphins, I don't necessarily. It's not that they don't move the needle. The location, that definitely does for sure. All right, look, everybody here, fantastic job. I really appreciate Ben and Bennett behind the glass here helping me out over this last 3 hours that have flown by. Thanks to Britt Giroli, my colleague at The Athletic, talking Major League Baseball. Chase Hughes with Monumental Sports, talking about the Wizards and the NBA draft. Again, if you want to follow me, you can read my work on The Athletic or hit me up on Twitter or follow my podcast, Last Man Standing. I'll be talking Commanders all week, of course, with OTAs here. And lots to watch out for. Jaden Daniels, apparently his arms. Are they big? Are they huge? Is he swole? What's going on there? We'll see in a few days. But that's going to be it for me. Ben Stanek signing off. Until next.